Point post, don't worry. Okay, folks, good afternoon, everybody. It's good to see you here, and I'm glad to choose this section as the last one for the conference. I usually, on my introduction, I say I have three goals. The previous session, I had four goals, which was keep everybody awake after lunch. And this one here, my fourth goal, will be make it worthwhile for you to choose this section as the last one of the conference. So my name is Armando Lacerda, and I'm a Microsoft certified trainer. I'm specialized in SQL Server, I'm specialized in SharePoint. I'm a dev guy, so you know, I do all dev platform. I once was certified in the infrastructure. I took my MCSE Windows NT 4, like another life. And never renewed it, but you know, I focused on development. And we're here for the exam prep for test 70467, which is the second one on the MCSE track, right? So what we're gonna see here in this session, just these four topics here, we're gonna see the certification overview, you know, the tracks. If you haven't been in other sessions here, it's gonna be like a review for you. We do have some flyers, some pamphlets here. I don't know if we have gotten it with the certification track, right? It's kind of written here. So if you have any questions after that, you can ask Keith, the specialized guy there, right there in the back, or me, of course. And so we're going to spend just a few moments in here, but we're going to be focused more on the topics, right? They're gonna, one of my goals here is to give you some tips about the topics in this test. The topics on the test, they're called ODs, objective domains. And what we, as an MCT, what we have figured out is most people are okay with the majority of the subjects in there. But there are a few subjects in there people just don't use every day. So I try to do a good guess working to point out, based on my experience, which ones would be the ones you'd be less familiar with, right? To try to point out where I should go to get more information, get ready for the test. So far, I've been okay. I've been in the previous two sessions, and I scored good, all right, on the topics. People are not very familiar with the topics I have chosen before. And there will be a few real questions right there, but not from the test, right? When you take a test, you sign up this NDA there, not supposed to take any questions out of there. I wouldn't be capable either because I don't have the good of a memory, you know, to memorize like 50 questions that I saw in the test. But I did make up some and I brought in here for us to discuss, you know, how our mind should work, should be focused when we go for the test. So they're real questions from the surreal world, you know, this thing I just make up in my mind, all right? And at the end, I have some exam tips and some extra resources for you to look after this section. This slide deck will be available online after next week, I think, in 2 weeks, it will be available online. The session is recorded, so we can, you know, play the session again if you want. If you want to take the slide deck with you, it's on the computer, have a flash drive here. If you have your Surface you bought here in the conference, we can, you know, sneak in and copy straight to your Surface. That would be a cool thing to do too. All right, so let me do a quick survey here. Do you already work with BI technology in SQL Server? Most of you, great. Do you have any Microsoft certification already? Wow, most of you, perfect. SQL Server 2008? Okay, 2012? There we go, got two people here in 2012. On BI track already? No, that's why you're here, right? What am I asking about? But cool, good for you. So there we are. You know SQL Server. All of you already answered that, right? You work with SQL Server day in and day out. You know SQL Server. You know your stuff. Now, the question to be answered here is, how do I get certified, right? How, you know, how can I prepare to for the test, you know, to be ready for the test? So this session is not about the technology. I assume you know the technology. You have already said you know the technology. This session is more about how to gear up my mind, you know, to be comfortable when the questions come up in a test. I was talking to one of my colleagues here, Chris Harrison, and he put it in a way I really liked it. You know, the test experience should be viewed as a job interview, right? It's not about how you do what you do in your current job, your current position, but how would you do in another situation, in another scenario, in a place that you're not that familiar with, right? So most people, most of my students, when I'm teaching a class, they come to me saying, "Armando, I have taken the test already and I failed. I don't know why I have failed. You know, there were these questions, these options, and I thought I'd choose the right one, but of course I failed because, you know, the test came out failed. So what was it?" And most of the times, is because we try to do the test thinking the way we would do it in our real world. The test is about the real world. It's just not about my real world, right? It's about the case study they get in there. In this particular level of certification I'm talking about here is way more about designing, you know, to apply solutions to scenarios, to case studies they give to us. So we have to gear up our minds to the case study, to the question scenario, and choose the options from that particular scenario, not from the things we're doing every day, right? So that's one of the tricks. At the end of this session, I will share with you my three C's, the three letter C's I use to get ready for the test and what I use when I'm taking my tests. So you want to get certified. How do you get certified? In summary, we have four steps here, right? Kind of trying to summarize it in four steps. First, where do you want to be? In this case, I believe you want to be a BI system expert, right? So we're going to show you the track to get there. Once you identify where you want to be, what you want to become, you identify these gaps. You know, the things that are there, but you don't use every day, but will be on the test. So you have to train yourself, you know, exercise yourself on those gaps. Then, there you go, fill the gaps, exercise on them, and take the exam, right? So we're going to spend most of our time in here, just going through all the steps, but most of this session will be about filling the gaps. All right, certification goals. Microsoft certification review, yeah, there we go. These are the major certifications you can get from Microsoft. When you pass any exam, you become a Microsoft certified professional, right? An MCP, that is a private website for MCPs, you know, www.microsoft.com/MCP, right? So when you pass the first test, you have access there. You can print a transcript, you can get like wallet cards and identify you as a certified guy. But when you complete a track, which the one printed out in here, and then I have some slides about that. When you complete a track, the first level, when you finish the first step on a track, is to become an MCSA, which is not on the slide. And by the way, there is no BI certification on MCSA. BI certification is only here on the... cool. It would be here, but not data platform, would be BI. All right? It would be written here BI, MCSA, BI. If you are working with Microsoft certification for a while, you've been taking tests for a while, in the past I used to have, right, used to be MCSE for system engineer, Microsoft certified system engineer. They got rid of that a few years ago and they changed it to MCITP, MCTS, you know, some other certification titles. Then they recovered it from a backup somewhere and put it back up there, but they changed the meaning, right? The E or the MCSE now is certified, Microsoft certified system specialist or expert, right? System expert. So the idea is on all of these certifications, you are, a master on the technology, but also on the on the product only, but everything that's required to apply the product to a scenario, right? To a particular case. So the idea is not to be like certified in Windows Server or certified in SQL Server, but certified in BI solutions, right? Involving SQL Server and private cloud, not questions about private cloud, but some one or two concepts in there, all right? So that's the idea. So these are the tracks, SQL Server Solution Associate. These three first tests in here, they are prerequisite to become a BI specialist or expert, ABI expert, right? They are about SQL Server, the product itself, so querying, managing, and this data warehouse is more about designing the architecture, right? You know, like disks, positioning, physical modeling, right? For a big volume of data, things like that, right? It's not actually focused on BI. BI will be after this slide. This one here is for data platform when designing SQL Server for big scenarios, big installations. And here is our case. We are on this test here for BI. So to get the solution expert certification, you have to pass that three first ones, 61, 62, 63, and then take these two here, 66 and 67, to be focused on BI. Tá certo? Oh, sorry. I'm from Brazil, just spoke in Portuguese. Getting a little tired, I apologize. So yeah, there we go. 64 and 65 are for the data platform. Okay, there we go. There are some, you're certified, right? Who is certified in 2008? DBAs in 2008, ITP?
DBD.
DBD, cool, you too? Yeah. Perfect. So for those of you who are already certified in SQL Server 2008 in BI, right, in 2008, you can take the upgrade path. Instead of taking five tests, you're going to take three tests, right? These two here, they're equivalent to 61, 62, and 63. And the next one, this is for the data platform. And this one here is for the BI. So you take those two plus 460. And with three tests, you are system expert in BI, all right? This is a short path to get there. I took this path first, all right? I took the upgrade path, got my certification, nice, perfect. But when I got recruited to be here, talk about 467, although it is included here that the objective domain is exactly the same, this one is like a 50 to 70 questions on both subjects, 66 and 67. And when you take the real test, I mean, the regular test is 50 to 70 each one. So say, you know what, I'm gonna try, I didn't have to do that, but I'm gonna try since I'm gonna talk about the test. I'm gonna try this thing. So I booked myself last week, took the test, and it's pretty much the same thing, it's just more of the same thing, you know, more questions on the same subjects, all right? So either way you go, the difficult level will be kind of the same, all right? So you decide which one you want to do. All right. You who are already certified, have you taken any tests in the previous 9 months? It has improved, right? Experience got better, isn't it? On the test? Colorful. It used to be black and white. The questions are not just, you know, select one, right? You have like drag and drop, right? You have hotspots you can click on, right? You have to click on. The point here in this slide is, if you have taken tests more, further than 9 months ago, you're probably gonna see new kind of questions showing up on the test for you. And the idea is, if you wanna get familiar with that, I'm not spend time on this one in this session, but on Sunday morning, there was a session about this. That's the session code, exam 101, right? So when these sessions become available for you and you can watch them online, if you want to learn more about which kind of questions you're going to have, you can go to that session, right? So we're going to focus here more on the subject. Yes, sir?
So would you go to the Microsoft Learning website to get more information on any upgrade paths that might apply to you and certifications you've had in the past?
Yeah, uh-huh. They have the track there. If you go to the certification website, there will be the MCSAs and MCSEs. So you're going to find the MCSE link for BI. You click on it, and you have the sequence of tests. I'm actually going to have some screenshots in here, but it's all live in there. Right? So definitely you can go there. They don't talk much about the questions, though, right? The style of questions you have. All right? In terms of preparation, We have this practice test from MeasureUp and from, what's the other one? Huh? Transcender, MeasureUp and Transcender. None of them have practice tests for our subject, right? 65, 66, 67. We don't have practice tests for those. So there is one for 62. Last time I checked, there was only one, and that was for 462. And on the Transcender version, they have a good simulation about how the new kind of questions behavior, right? So that's another option for you. I don't know if they're still going to be open when you finish this session here, but you know there is the study hall there. You can try to take a look in there, all right? I'm not sure what time they close. Well, this slide here is about the score, right? If you take a test, in order to pass the test, you have to score 700. What does it mean, score 700? Like, the test may have 50 to 70 questions. You know, we don't know how many questions we're going to land in there. Let's say it's 50. So to score 700, we have to answer, right? 35 questions, 70%. Would that be it? No, that wouldn't be it, all right? If I have this link here. This link is with the with Libri, which is the mastermind behind all of these tests, right? And she explains on the video how they come up with this 700 grade, right? It's not based on you got that, you failed that, you got that, you failed that. There is a math going on behind the scenes. So the point here is, like, don't do the math when trying to do the test, right? Don't. I may have missed that. It's not that one-to-one, right? There is a math behind and another psychology thing going on. So take a look on this link here later, and you see she explaining that to you pretty well. Anyways, 700 is the passing score. It really doesn't matter if you score 700 or 1,000, right? You pass. So aim for, you know, get a good grade. I have 49 tests. I think I scored 100 only twice. So, and I failed many. So, all right, let's move on to the next step. So I know what I want to be. I want to be system expert in BI. Cool. So, and I already do it in my everyday activities. So the next step is you have to find out what are the areas that will be covered on the test. They're there on the website, but you are not that familiar with, right? You have to figure that out in order to better prepare for the test. So you have to focus and, you know, kind of a measure the top weighting. There is a percentage number here. You see the top weighting on every object domain. So when you go to the website, this is a portion or a snapshot of the web page. When you go there, you have this ODs, the objective domain. When you click one of these plus signs in here, like this one is for the ETL, actually it was the shortest one to fit on this slide. That's why I clicked on that one. See, the ETL topic over here, ETL. So when you click on the plus sign in there, the cool thing is you have the detailed explanation about what is going to be covered in there, so you can kind of start researching the thing. And they help you with the research. You see, at the end of the top, every top, they have these links here to point you to MSDN, where you can find articles right on MSDN about those topics. You see three topics in here, three links in here, where you can get started, right, researching that particular subject. That's really cool. This was not there before they upgrade the website. Now they have this link in there. And to be honest, quite honest with you, if you go to their website, to the test page right now, this is the only resource you have there. There are no books. This gentleman was talking to me here before the session. There are no books like the training kits, right, for this test. There are actually no courseware focused on the test. There are some courseware based on BI platform. I'm going to show you at the end of this presentation. But you know, from the test page, this is pretty much the resources you have. This one and the forums. I'm going to talk more about the forums later. So cool. I know where to find the topics I don't know, right? So you know where to go, the web page. And then you have to start working with them. So I'm going to spend the rest of the time here working with you on some of these topics that I believe will be beneficial to you, right, to get you better prepared for the test. So let's go for the first one, one of these topics. Again, five ODs, objective domains. This is the weight of them. So you see, we want to really focus here. It's more, you know, values more, and this one not so much, but it's my preferred area. SSIS, I just love the tool. All right, first one, plan the business intelligence infrastructure. Actually, there are a few slides in here. See, two slides. Because there are many topics in there. If you go to the web page, you're going to see the first one is full of topics. The last one is like thin, very thin, not that many topics in. But what are going to be measured on in there? Optimize batch procedures. You see, in this level of test, it seems that they are very focused on designing and optimizing processes. There will be a lot of focus on get things working better, and also how to apply technology in a particular case. So you got here, optimize, configure, understand the performance, analyze and optimize the performance. You see the drill there, right? They're kind of you must be able to evaluate the scenario, evaluate the context, and figure out, you know, the question based on performance, you know, all the aspects of performance. So what are the concepts about performance? I thought about throwing a slide in here with a scale when you have denormalization, meaning a lot of data, repeated data, right? And on the other side, processing. So what's the performance balancing here? As I get more duplicated data, denormalized data, I get better performance when retrieving information, is that right? When I get more, less data duplication, I get more requests, you know, the process becomes a little heavier. In terms of analysis, usually to achieve better performance, what do you want to do? Denormalize information, right? You want to get information actually duplicated, but pre-calculated as much as we can. Is that right? When doing this, applying to analysis services, applying to integration service, you always go this trend. You know, if I expand more storage, I will have more performance when retrieving information. But in order to expand more storage, I have to worry about the placement of this data. If I put all the information in just one storage, my performance will suffer because of all the I/O will be in one particular device. So I have to start considering partitioning my information in physical devices and perhaps even in physical distinct services, distinct instances. So you have to have this concept in mind all the time when looking into these optimizing topics. Like in this case here, optimizing batch procedures, extract, transform, and load. What would impact in my performance in there. Concurrency, which is not the case here, but concurrency would be one when reading the information, right? The processing of dimensions, right? To process if it's load change in dimension, if it's just a cumulative dimension, whatever you want to do with that. So you have to consider those. In terms of caching, I picked one of these guys here. It was caching. There we go. In terms of caching, what happens when the client application tries to grab information from the cube and the cube is under processing? You know, analysis service is refreshing the cube, processing the cube. What happens to the client application? And this is an interactive section, all right? I want you to talk to me, you know, ask me questions as we move along. Please interact. So if I'm using Excel, I'm connecting to analysis service, and I try to get information from the cube, and the cube is under refresh, right? It's processing, reprocessing the cube. What happens to Excel?
I don't use it, I'm sorry.
You don't use it? Okay.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's not available. The user doesn't have access to the data. It's just not available. So you are being tested on performance, and you really need to improve performance for the client so the client doesn't have to wait until the process finishes. How would you do that? Well, there is an option there in the cube, right, when you design the cube, about using proactive caching. What does proactive caching do? While the updates are being applied either to the dimensions or to the fact table, the whole cube has a hole, right? While it's processing that, it's keeping the previous data so the user still have access to whatever was in there. So the user does not available, right? It doesn't hang out like that. Is that okay? What am I doing here? See, duplicating information. And when it's done, I'm getting rid of the old one. But for a while, I need space because there will be an overload on data on my storage. Does that make sense? Right? So you have to to go into the storage options for the cube and update these things. Now, how do you get here? Unfortunately, in this session, I'm not supposed to go into the product and click around for you to see. It's not a technical demonstration. But this is something you will be required when you go for the test. There are questions there in the test that will ask you like this. What are the steps you have to do, have to accomplish in order to achieve this? And there is this box here with, this area with four or five blocks, and you have to drag and drop like three or four of them and arrange them in the right order. Like in this case here, would be something like you click on the partition, right? And you click on the storage options, and then go for the proactive cache. So you have to know the order. What's the goal of this? The goal is you have to have experience with the product. Just by reading, you're not gonna be ready for the test. So I do have some books, some references at the end I would like to share with you. But just by reading the books, you're not gonna be ready for the test. You have to create a testing environment or use Microsoft Virtual Labs for that. They are online for free. You click on there and you try this out, right? If you don't have a hang on it, you're not gonna be well prepared for the test. Does that make sense? All right, so very important. All right, so proactive caching. It's still on the same topic, you see the same OD, plan for performance, some extra topics in here. Optimize queries for huge data sets. I believe they're talking more about indexes. I have to create indexes or not create indexes to support some queries. When you have this huge amount of data, depending on how distributed this data is and if it's sparse, not that unique, right? Having an index will not help much, right? Or if you have like that amount of nulls, and then we can use the sparse, right, approach to it. So there are a few ways you can work with this thing. From the analysis service perspective, I have this 500 terabytes staging table, right? My fact table on the relational data, in the relational storage. Now I'm gonna create a cube for that. So all the aggregations. What about the details? Am I going to replicate those 500 terabytes in my cube? Or will I keep them as a rollap, right? Keep hybrid OLAP, right? Keeping the fact out of the cube. So I have to measure this. What's this? The scenario will give me all the clues to make the decision which approach to go, right? All of them are valid. So the scenario will give me the tips to decide which approach to go. Understand the difference between partitioning for load performance and versus query performance. What are we talking about here? Well, I have clients who consume my cube. And I have a process who goes into the cube and throws new information there every day. So when I do partitioning, it's all about performance, right? Partitioning is all about, to partition my cube is all about performance. Now, which one do I want to assist? Like, if I want to, which one did you select? Oh, that particular one, perfect. Which one, let's get to this slide here. There we go. I want to load data faster into my cube. What should I partition my cube on? I have to select Don't bother reading that, right? It's just the screens for you to know how the wizard looks like. I'll get into that in a second. So I want to have a process of refreshing my cube faster. So I know that whatever's coming in is coming in after a particular period, let's say a date, right? So the new data coming will not interfere on previous dates. It's always a new range. So if I partition my cube dynamically by date, analysis service will do the load process way faster. It doesn't have to bother about the rest, right? I may create a new partition for every week, as an example, or every day, and every time I do a load, I load on a new partition without bother with the ones I already processed. Does that make sense? So that's partitioning for load performance. Is that right? When assisting the clients, so the clients, they work with my cube, like in per region. I have managers or BI users that will work per region. So partitioning them by region will help the BI users. Is that right? It's either one. You have the scenario to let you know which way you should go. All right? And this one here, the screenshots for the partition wizard. So here is a MDX expression. Actually, my bad. You know, what's important here is the where clause, right? It's at the end. These are just the columns in here. So there was a where clause here specifying the actual criteria to partition my cube. And here is where the cube, the partition will be stored. Now, you know this, right? You have the current instance and you have a remote instance, meaning I can have many servers working together in parallel, right? Processing requests from users. So we can have parallel partition distributed among many servers, many analysis services, right? And that's a cool thing for you to experience when doing your practice too, right? Get 2-3 virtual machines with SQL Server each one of them and do this partition. And when new data comes, it will go to a particular server or in the current server, but in a particular device, right? Specific device, so we have no concurrence in terms of I/O. Does that make sense? Still there? All right. Some other topics, I just moved back once, one slide. These other topics are kind of cool too, like when to index the effect table. Now, when I'm going to index effect table? Oh, index effect table, what is that? I mean, I thought when I got the effect table into the cube, you know, the cube will do all the storage, right? And be faster access in the cube. But again, when you are working with huge data sets, you may decide not to get the granular data into the cube. Does that make sense? Right? Not that, too big. And perhaps the users don't go into the details that often. They work more on the high level aggregations. So when you really have to go to the fact tables, you know, to the relational source, you may want to have specific structures that are waiting for you. Like in SQL Server 2012, we have the column index. Have you heard about the column index? Right? So that's a place where the column index would apply, right? When I have to go back and do some aggregations at some level, they are still on the relational data on a hybrid deployment of a cube. Make sense? Right? So have you done hybrid deployment of a cube? Have you? Yes, I scored again. Oh, one. I have one gentleman there who have done it, right? So I scored it again. See, that's what I'm talking about. Kind of subjects we don't do every day, but will be on a test. So you have to make sure you cover that before you go for the test. All right. Plan for scalability. MOLAP, ROLAP, and HOLAP. Quick review here. MOLAP. Does analysis server go back to the staging tables, to the relational tables, if I use MOLAP? No. You can say it out loud, no problem, right? No, there we go. I'm a trainer, so I always like to see people interacting. ROLAP, is a cube ever created? I mean, a multidimensional cube ever created in ROLAP? No, right? What happens? All the data and the aggregation stays in the relational storage. And do not confuse this with tabular data model. That's something else, all right? This is the multidimensional, but for some reason you have come up with, you've decided that that's the right place to keep it. Perhaps because you have other applications get into there, not through the analysis service or whatever. But definitely that's not the best option for performance through analysis service, all right? And the one for big data, right? I shouldn't say big data is another concept, right? Big data is kind of another concept. But you know, when you have this huge storage there, a hybrid for to keep the facts apart from the aggregations would be a great idea. Does it make sense? You okay with that? All right. Which one to choose? Well, there is no right or wrong answer for each one of them. They're all valid answers. The best one depends on the case, right, on the scenario. So in order to evaluate which one to use, always consider the volume of data that you are dealing with, right, in the question. The processing time, you know, how long it's going to take to get the gear updated or to move information around. And sometimes they have restrictions about availability. And the question have something like, you know, it must be high available or something like that, right? So just consider these three elements when work with these things. Volume of data is always very important. It's going to be a primary concern. Now, I don't have much storage place, so I have to keep it not much denormalized, right? Not much duplicated. Or storage place is not a problem. I really need to focus on performance. So I'm going to go for the option that requires more space. All right? Oops, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Manage upgrades. It's way more about getting data, like you have a cube on previous versions and you want to have it upgraded to new versions. And when you're working with clustering, which not, I think is not the object domain here, you know, the order to apply the cluster patch is in the right place, right? Like the inactive node first and switch and so on. So it's the idea just about getting the server up to date, so the involved servers up to date. All right, maintain server health, design automation, automated strategy. Now, you see, that's when those previous three tests can come handy, right? Those 461, 462, and 463. That's when they come really handy. If I want to automate something in SQL Server, who is responsible for that? What service is responsible for that? SQL Server agent. Very good. Now, I want to specify the steps I want to automate. How do I do that? Ooh, silence. I want to specify the steps, like I want to process my cube. I want to refresh my cube. Where do I do that? How do I do that? XMLA is an option. You can write that, but you don't want to go there. There is an easier way to do this. Huh? Very good. Integration service, right? When you think about integration service, we think about moving data across, right? From data storage A to data storage B. But in integration service, I believe you have seen that already, there are some tasks in there for data maintenance, both for the relational database, like in backup, refreshing indexes, all of this, as well as a particular control for automating cube processing, right? You have, I think I have a screenshot. This is it. Analysis service processing task editor, right? Analysis service processing. There is a particular task there on integration service where you can specify what you want to refresh. You want to refresh a dimension, a group of dimensions, all the dimensions, you know, the facts, we'll reprocess the aggregations, what do you want to do, all right? So how do you go for automation? Analysis service, integration service, create your package there, define, and schedule it to run on Management Studio through SQL Server agents, all right? So it's all there, perfect. All right, let's have some fun here. Let's work with some of these sample questions. So which option should you use to deploy a cube process daily the fastest way possible. Now remember, when you go for a question, when we are taking the test and you are dealing with a question, you have to apply the three C's. What are the three C's? What I know about the product, in this case here, analysis service, right? What I know about the product, my concepts, the context of the question, and the restrictions the question may give me. Usually they do. So we have to spot these two guys, the context and the restrictions. I want to deploy a cube, restriction, fastest way possible. Which way should I go? C, new partitions daily. Any other question? Any other answer? Everybody agrees with C? Huh? D, proactive caching. So I heard D and E, right? Oh, C. Roll up, this one here. Roll up. Okay, let's discuss a little bit. Because you see, you have to apply this, shift your engine in this way that I have just mentioned with the three C's. So these guys are out of scope, all right? Perfect. Hybrid and MOLAP, they kind of not apply into the context. They seem like not applying to the context. So we want to deploy a cube because, you know, they would process the whole thing again. So we'll deploy the cube daily in the fastest way possible. Now, daily gives me a restriction. I want to do it daily, right, every day. And I want to keep it as short processing time as possible. If I go proactive caching, am I updating in the shortest way possible? No, I'm making it available all the time to the client applications, right? But it's not doing the fastest way possible. It's taking all the time it's needed to do whatever other module I decide to use. So C, rollup, leaving the details, right, at the relational data. That will save some data in terms of moving the granular information into the cube. But it will not save time on processing the cube. It's going to still processing the whole thing. So the fastest way possible to get information into the database is actually creating new partitions for every processing period, because you don't have to bother with the things that have been already processed, right? Again, according to the context and the restrictions of the question. That may not be the right answer if the question was tangled a little bit, right? If I just switch it a little bit, it may not be the right question anymore. Doesn't that make sense? We good? All right. Move. Thank you. Now, noticed. Remember I told you, if I change the question a little bit or completely, it will not be the case anymore. This is a kind of a type of question you will have in a test, right? You see, I have the options in here, from A to E, and I have the same options in here from A to E. It's the same collection of options, right? No change. What has changed is just the question itself. And you're going to have this kind of behavior in the test, right? When you're taking the test, one of the possible kind of questions you have in there is you're going to have a collection of options, way more options, like 10 options in there, and a particular answer will be the right answer for one of the questions in a group of 5 or 6 questions with the same possible options, all right? So it's not a mistake on the test. You're not, you're not seeing like a deja vu or something like that. It's the way it's designed to be. So in this case, decision makers rarely drill down to the detail level. Most of their analysis are done in a higher aggregation level. In order to improve performance, which cube storage method should you use? A, OLAP, hybrid OLAP. Which one? B has in ball? MOLAP, okay. E, proactive caching. Mm. Cool. Let's discuss that. So this one here, since the question has changed, may not be the right one, right? Don't use that logic in the test, okay? It's just because it's just picking another one. Relational OLAP is usually not a good option, right? Because only if the data is that big and is accessed through other means other than analysis service. Now we kind of go with we left, right, with these three guys here, OLAP, MOLAP, and proactive caching. Now proactive caching, again, is to allow the clients to keep using unrefreshed data while the cube is being processed. Is that right? Does that match? No?
So I thought proactive caching was when you can set up the analysis services and just check the relational database to see if that's updated. And once that's updated, then it'll grab the new data and process just that new data.
Exactly. That is right. That is right. I think it does. You don't think it is? I'm pretty sure it does. We check that after the session, okay? Yeah. If the stage information changes, it goes automatically into the cube. Is that right?
If the staging data changes,
it goes. We check that. You'll be notified in process and get into the cube.
Yeah.
That is.
You don't have to set up the cube process to figure out when it needs to process.
Exactly. Yeah, that is right. But why I'm doing that? While processing? What is this?
It makes shadow copy.
Huh?
It's called shadow copy.
Shadow copy. Yeah, well, the process. No, I was hearing a noise. I was hearing a noise. I'm sorry, I can hear you. Yeah, we can check that out, but proactive caching plays a role on the client access.
Correct.
On the client access in there. In any case, it doesn't apply to the scenario, does it? In either way?
Nope.
Doesn't apply to the scenario, because the scenario is talking about working on the aggregation level. Is that right? So proactive caching, whatever case it is not the answer. So it leaves us with number one, A. That would be the right one, right? Regardless of the proactive cache. We've got to check that out on the documentation a bit. All right, so you see, you may have some questions that look good, but when you have this best one, it has to do with the question. The question was not asking about, like, automatically update from the client, from the relational. The question was asking about working at the aggregation level. Is that correct? All right, so that's how you have to approach these questions when you go for the test. Another one, using the same collection of possible answers. Decision makers need to have access to the latest information from the stage tables without losing performance in the client's analysis tools, client's analysis tool. Which one would do that? Hold up. What did you say? E. Proactive. There we go. Proactive caching. Because of the processing level. Is that right? The automatic processing of the changed data. Perfect. Moving on. All right, so that was the first one.
How much?
Okay. A lot of topics to cover yet. BI infrastructure. So let's take a little look in here on the object domains of the BI infrastructure. Configure security impersonation between databases. And you see, that's one of the points that's not covered on the Microsoft official classes for analysis service, right? They do cover security for tabular data model, but on the official class, which I teach quite a while, they don't cover, they used to cover, but they don't cover anymore security on the multidimensional data, right, on the MDX. So you have to exercise that through a book, right? To really have to get a book to get ready for this topic here. Implementing dynamic dimensions, security within a cube. I forgot to mention that. sometimes there is a link in here, is a note I put in there to let you know when you get this slide deck from the TechEd website later when they make it available, or if you, you know, grab a copy here. On the content portion in the PowerPoint, you know, the PowerPoint file has these notes, right? Slide notes. For many of these slides, I've placed some links in there. Like for this one here, I haven't seen this in many books, but I have seen some blog posts about it. So I put some blog post link for you to try it out, right? To define security in the dimension based on dynamic filtering. Like, you know, if this person browses, you can have access only to this portion of my cube. It's nothing to do with partition, which is for performance, right? But it's more for visibility, for, you know, this kind of person can only have access to this set of information from my cube. Have you got a request like that before? Like, you know, people from the Northeast can only see Northeast information. You know, people, sometimes I see people doing that by creating distinct cubes, right? Like data marts for each of these areas, and the guy has permissions on the whole cube that, right there. But that can be done dynamically. And I think I have a, yeah, this one. See, implementing dynamic dimension security within a cube. So you define an MDX expression for it. Evaluates it and define the access for the user account, right? So yeah, grab the PowerPoint later and you can see you know, the blog post for that. Is that okay? We cool? What else we have there? Oops, sorry. Okay, configure security for extranet environment. Someone asked me before, now what about Azure? Is Azure involved? You know, does it show up sometimes on this class, on these tests? Yeah, you see Azure like here and there is not the main focus of the thing, but that would be one of the cases. You know, you get some Azure application in the cloud that's going here and read information from your private cloud, things like that, right? So what are the permissions and the security concerns you have to take about that? Kerberos security, you know, trust relationships in domains, skills and authentication mechanisms, ability to build secure solutions end-to-end. It's kind of vague on that one, but all on the same subject. The strategy here, second portion, still on the same topic. Design and secure rules for calculated measures. On the previous one, I think, yeah, it wasn't the previous one. Understanding the trade-offs between regular secure analysis of security and dynamic security, which means you have to reprocess these things from time to time to see new rules, who kept, new rules, new users who have come into place. And plan and independent security requirements for BI solution. And that particular one is based on the case, and really on the scenario when you have to deploy it on an outside environment. All right, partition, back to partition. So choose the proper partition strategy for the data warehouse and the cube. Remote, local, implement parallel load to fact tables by using partitioning switch when you have the partition stored in distinct places, storage places, and use data compression in fact tables. What's the backdrop of data compression in fact tables? Performance, downgrade performance, and you maximize storage. Is that right? So that balance I mentioned before. So you really have to look at the question to make a decision which way to go. Backup strategy, design a high availability and a disaster recovery strategy. Clusters, right? How to go for, I mean, clustering in analysis services is not a rocket science like it used to be, right? Relational models are a little bit more tricky. But here is the idea just to have, you know, make sure you understand you have to have a virtual name for the cluster so analysis service will answer through the virtual name and on the switch when we do the clustering, the automatic switch from nodes, and proactively prevent issues more in the management side. All right, designing a logging and auditing strategy. Now, this one is important, it's more focused on integration service. I was talking to someone the other day from the product team, and I like the way he placed it. It was like this. From SQL Server 2008 to 2008 R2, were there many changes on integration service? Not many, right? Pretty much none. It's kind of the same way, same thing. So this, he said like, kind of miss that. Right, they release a bunch of new things on SQL Server as a whole, as a suite, but integration service, not that many new additions. On SQL Server 2012, we have a lot of new additions on integration service, and I just love what we have in there. But one of the big stars on these new changes is the way we deploy packages. In SQL Server 2008 and 2008 R2, there was only one deployment model, which was the package, right? You get the package, and you deliver the package in production, whatever way you want to do it, file system, MSDB, whatever it is. So you get into production, perfect. Now in SQL Server 2012, back in 2008, one package could refer to another one, right? Could make an external execution, would make them dependent on each other, but still they have to be deployed individually, right? Now in SQL Server 2012, we have another deployment model, which is project deployment model. And when we do project deployment model, the process taking care of that execution is not the same one who takes care of the package when it's deployed isolatedly, right, by itself. It's a different process. It's a different guy taking care of the execution in runtime environment for the project deployment model. And because we got a new process, a new service, integration service running our the project we have deployed, there are new features we can use that are not there by default when you install SQL Server. So have you heard about the integration service logging infrastructure known as the SSIS DB? Have you heard about it? Got one here, two, three, right? Very important subject. Will be there, I can say will be there. I don't know what test you're going to take and may not have. Remember, I have took this test twice, and one of the occasions I didn't have any questions about that. But it's a very, it's an important subject for, you know, day-to-day activity. Logging infrastructure, for example, through the catalog view. So let me see. Yeah, there we go. On this slide here, I have the link there for you, where you can see the integration service catalog on that SSIS database and the catalog views, right, that will be created in there. As I mentioned, this is not there by default. And actually, when you go in here, you know, it's like a reference guide, but not much explanation, not much examples on it, right? It's just a reference guide. You really have to go for some blog posts, research more on that to get something, to be able to monitor some of the elements in there. Have you noticed this note here on managing SSMS? You don't have this guy here there. If you, when you go back to your server, take a look, and you have the node, but it's empty. There's nothing in there. So you have to manually, after installing SQL Server, you have to come in here and create this database. So there is a GUI there to help you out creating this database. On the MSDN website, you have the manual way to create it as well. So that's something you have to enable. And there are some other elements involved in here. This uses CLR store procedures. You're familiar with CLR store procedures? Now these guys in programming.net, they go there, create some code, register this code in SQL Server has store procedures, right? And then they can be called. This is a feature that must be enabled in SQL Server in order for it to work, right? So when you create these things, you're gonna make sure, when you're doing graphical user interface, it's check mark there, you cannot disable it, right, when you create it for you. But you have to make sure that thing is there available for you. And when you have this, when the integration service is running the package, it's bringing information through this catalog views in here for you to monitor how the packages are executing, right? So you can keep track of runtime execution environment with way more details, right? So it's something that kind of new, really new, and I would suggest you to take a look and research more on that one, all right? So I think it's the last question here, the last surreal questions for us to have some fun with, and then we're gonna start wrapping this up. Let's see. You need to deploy an analysis service serving the same database to a large audience. Mm-hmm. How would you do it? Synchronize. Very good. Anybody else? So restore the database from the primary server to the next one, right, to the second one. Is that a viable? Yeah, you can do it, right? It's doable? Yeah, you can. You see, when you see this best answer, the other options, they must be doable. Like, I can do that. That would work. It may take longer. It may spend more storage space, but that's possible. Process the cube on both. You know, get the cube processed on both servers. That's also doable. But let's see here. Serving the same database to a large audience. How would you do it? The best answer, the question here kind of doesn't help, but the best answer I had in my mind when I made this up was like the fastest way. So the fastest way would definitely be synchronizing, right? Synchronize them, kind of replication, right? It doesn't have to reprocess the cube, it will just replicate the data. Is that right? Make sense? All right, next one. Okay, third topic. Wow, man, I'm late. Let's go into report service. Require report service data set. Okay, design a report service data set. Query parameters. In the previous session, I kind of mentioned the filtering of the data set and the filtering of the report itself, right? So we have data set filtering and we have report filtering when you use the parameters on the report. You gotta make sure you understand the difference of these two guys. Create appropriate SQL Server for application on the MDX. That's kind of a thing I don't see many people working every day, like using report service straight to the cube and doing MDX queries against the cube. Copy and paste is more likely what people use, but you gotta be okay with that. Managing data rights and security. Let me see which one. Oh, okay. Manage data rights and security, extracting data from analysis service, balance query-based processing versus filter-based processing the report service, as I mentioned before, and managing data sets through the use of stored procedures. Make sure you understand and know how to map parameters to the query. As an example, let's say in your report service you use a .NET data source. Can you use named parameters on your stored procedure call? For .NET, yes. Now let's change it a little bit. You're connecting to the data source using OLEDB to connect to the data source. Can you use named parameters? Nope. You have to use those question marks as placeholders for the parameters. Is that right? And then make sure the parameters are in the right order according to the question marks you have. So depending on the data source, you have distinct possibilities, right? Gotta make sure of that. Manage Excel service and reporting service for SharePoint. When you have report service working in SharePoint, you gotta make sure you know where to go to set it up, right? To define like schedules, you know, refreshing schedules and so on for the for the subscriptions in SharePoint. Where would you go for that? Huh? Good. The answer is no. You see, most people think about that. If I'm a SharePoint manager, if I manage stuff, right, I usually go, and especially if it's a service, like reported service is a service, I would go to central administration. But the central administration, because in the case of a reporting service, is way for the service as a whole, like standardization, integration, the instances you have supporting websites. But when you really want to deal with the website specifics, like the subscribers for reports, like in a particular website, on the site manager, see site settings of a particular site, on the site settings, you have the report service area right there, right? For the specifics of that site. Is that right? So it's important to know which one you go. And this is for SharePoint integration, right? Yeah, this is the central administration. See, in the central administration, see the overall settings, you know, the jobs they have running there for each instance and so on, right? So kind of different. You have these two places, you have to make sure which place to go. If it's native, reporting service, configuration tools, right? Reporting service, configuration tools, if you have to work with reporting service settings. And some other settings are only available through the .config file on the reporting service directory. So we gotta be familiar for the test which way to go, right, depending on what I wanna change. All right, so designing acquisition strategy, identify the data sources that needed to be used to pull data. Again, back to integration servicing here, right? Determine the changes, incremental in the data source, like in the time window. Let me see, yeah, this is kind of straightforward in here. What data to be retained for how long? You have to understand that from the scenario, it's always based on the scenario. Profiling source data. This, I think, yeah, that data acquisition, that goes to that too. There are two new services in SQL Server 2012 in terms of data quality. Do you remember which one they are? Master Data Service. DQS, Data Quality Service, right? So we have these two guys. Are you familiar with these guys? Have you seen them before? Have you worked with them before? Few people in here, right? You more likely, since you're in the OD, more likely you're going to have some questions on those. I think the most important thing to keep in mind in terms of these two guys is they work based on, because they do data quality and data consolidation, right, to try to map to the original data sources, they work based on the concept of the domain. What are the possible options for a particular field, right, a particular area? So this concept of domain and the possible values for a particular field or particular structure in my data, it's very important in this topic, all right? Because they will work with that domain to validate the data, to classify the data that come in from the sources, all right? So very important to get that concept there. All right, this is one reporting services in native mode, all right? By the way, Armando, you're going back to report service and back into integration service and back to report service, then in analysis service. You crazy? Was that Bourbon Street or something you made these lines? It's the way they are on the web page, all right? Just follow the exactly same way they are on the web page, all right? So when you read there, it's kind of a fuzzy, right? So when you go prepare for yourself, put them in order. I didn't do that for you, though. But it's exactly the same order they are there on the web page. So there we go. This is a reporting service configuration manager. Yeah, we have this guy there. This is a UI. In the test, more likely you're going to have some questions about command line. So make sure you cover the command line options too, all right? Because they love to do command line. There are these new questions about hotspots, where to click. But in my experience, taking a bunch of tests before, they just love to ask questions about command line, you know, how to write the command. BI reporting solution architecture. Yeah, linked reports, drill reports. When to use report service, report builder, or Crescent. Look at that. That was found that funny when I was preparing this slide. So we know report service. Who uses report service? Oh, I know you use. I mean, what kind of IT people would use the report service? Developers, right? These are more kind of a specialized tool for developers to use. Which kind of a user, right, would use report builder? Regular use, right? BI users, you know, people who are familiar with creating reports without much troublesome, right? Without much trouble in there. Just drag and drop elements and make up the reports, is that right? So it's important to keep these things in mind. Now, who is this guy? PowerView, right? It's the performer name, right? Before they actually release it, of PowerView. It could have been written PowerView in there, but when you see the OD, it's still Crescent there in the web page. I found that funny because in Office 2 2013, we do have PowerView for Excel. You don't have to have SharePoint anymore to have Power View working with Power Pivot, right? You can go straight in there. It's a great new thing. And I think here at the TechEd, they announced they have Power View working with multidimensional data source, right? You don't have to be to point to tabular data source only anymore, right? You can work both ways, both sources. So these are new things. I don't expect to think these new things on the test that, you know, that close, you know, that soon, because they still have the old name on the OD. So that kind of gives me a clue, right, where to place my mind in the timeline there to get ready for the test. But again, they keep improving, they keep adding these things without notice. So take the test soon. design and implement context transfer when interlinking all types of reports in terms of getting information from many sources. Implement BI tools for reporting SharePoint. Select a subscription strategy. You know the subscription strategy, right? Like a data subscription, manual subscription, report service. You have that thing working for both native mode and SharePoint integration, right? So you have to choose which one to use. Like you are responsible to send this report to a bunch of people according to specific criteria, right? One wants to have it in Excel format, one wants to have it in HTML format, and the other one wants to have it in PDF format. And you have this 200 users you want to send this report to. What's the best strategy? Mark one by one or have a data subscription for them? Data subscription, right? All right, I have 30 seconds to finish this. So let's go with this one here and wrap this up. You need to manage reporting service, report schedule. Oh, there you go, report schedule for users on a SharePoint integrated installation. How should you do this? Which tool? Central administration?
Site.
Ah, there you go, site, right? Site settings at the root site supported by SharePoint. All right, I have to cut this short, right? Our time is really late here. I apologize for that. I love this interaction, but it's just too many topics in here. Let me see something to emphasize in here. Design enterprise data warehouse, choose between natural, yeah, you know, when the, you see you're back to the design subject, so you have to look into the scenario and see which keys to work with. If you have multiple fact tables in the cube, you know, the aggregation level, the measure groups, you have to create. Measure groups is kind of a common topic, right? So you have to have measure groups for distinct aggregation levels, you know, when you have multiple fact tables on a cube. It's important there. Design the data warehouse, design data marts, and reverse analysis service. Row stamp. We used to have row stamp on integration service in the past, right, on the previous version. There was one of these transformation, not transformation, but on the data grid, you could have a row stamp in there. And that worked in a particular storage place in analysis service. I don't quite remember the name right now. But now the row stamp we have there is the timestamp, right, the actual timestamp on the table. Choose between performance aggregation operations, surrounding architecture, supporting the data marts. Design a schema, which one to use, multidimensional modeling in star schema or snowflake. Which one is usually the best one? Star schema. But you have a lot of snowflake when you go tabular. It's very common to see a snowflake design when you go tabular. So make sure if you get some tabular context in there, you know, Snowflake is kind of a way to go. Design cube, still on the same top, cube architecture, data model, partitions. Yeah, they go pretty much in the same subject here, but different approach in terms of data placement. What else? Performance tune, a MOLAP cube. Yes, the red thing is blinking here. All right. Yeah, this is the relationship design, right, in between fact tables. So you decide how you want to do it. This is an important one, I think, is how to define a many-to-many, right? Just make sure you understand that if you have to define a many-to-many relationship in between fact tables, you got to have what they call here a fact-less tables, right? You create this fact class, which means a measure without measures, right? A measure group without measures is just having a table with the common keys to relate the other two fact tables. And then you can have your users browsing either way. Designing BI semantic models, how to use MDX, I kind of mentioned that already. Choose between UDM. Now, this topic here really throws me off, right? I don't work creating questions for this test, but this guy here kind of throws me off because UDM is the same as the semantic model. Semantic model is improvement of UDM. So if you have SQL Server 2008, your cube is UDM. When you upgrade to 2012, it becomes, right away, right? When you do that, it becomes semantic model, BISSM. So I really didn't get quite that you know, you want to stay in 2008 for some cubes. So choosing between either one of them, you can only be in this one here if you're still in 2008. Designing and creating MDX calculations, that's an important one too. I think I have a screenshot in here, right? You know how to go for that one, for calculations? You go into cube design, and there is a tab there called calculations, right? And you can create sets, you can create members for dimensions, right? You can create all of these elements in there. And when you get in there, you have this MDX structure here to define the calculation. In this case here, it is doing calendar, getting the information there. Let's create a new member. Yeah, there you go, create a new member. Right, based on a particular intersection semester, or a particular month, from the Adventure Works Cube, and getting this information from there. The semester notification, and all the rows on the category, and the measures, right, on this intersection. There we go, or the quantity measure for this intersection. All right, so important to have that in mind. And last one, finally, design integration service package execution. It's pretty much that same thing you have already mentioned if you're going to do project deployment or package deployment. The trend will be, I believe, because it's a new feature, right? Project deployment. Okay? Plan to deploy analysis service. Demonstrate awareness of, you see, they want you to show that you are familiar with these things. When to deploy on the database, when to deploy in the file system. Design package configurations. You know the package configuration, right? You get this XML file, you can configure pre-configured options and have it looking for fillings for the options, either in the registry or environment variables, right, these places. So you want to make sure you have covered that too. A lot of topics in there, right? Sort of lost track of my time here. Are we okay? I mean, did you get a good idea about the topics you don't work every day that more likely will be there? Any questions on that one? No? So just fasten here. Keep the three C's on your mind. What you know about the technology, apply that, you know, learn the context, and apply the constraints. The right answer for these questions, they're usually right there in the intersection of these three things. You know, I know how the product works. I know what they're looking for, and these are the restrictions when implementing. When looking at the restrictions, it may lead me to a solution that I wouldn't do usually, but it's what they're expecting in the question. Is that right? All right, see, these are the books, right? It's 763, it's not 67, rather. As I said, no books specific for this test out there yet. I used this guy here, had a lot of fun with it to prepare for this test. Good book, good reading. This is a good one for analysis service, tabular model, right? So if you're not familiar with tabular model yet, that's an important one to take a look at. These are the classes, Microsoft official classes, C10, 777, 778. They're not focused on the test, but they cover the platform, right? I mentioned in the previous session, data mining is a possibility in the cube, but as you could see, it doesn't show on the OG, right? Nonetheless, this class here talks about data mining. So it's a topic that not useful for the test. Some other resources to go, if you go to the MCSE Business Intelligence, There will be their discussion forums and wikis. They're kind of quiet there yet, but if you start using this, Mike is there, Mike Corky is there, and I will be there, I think, soon as a volunteer, right, to help you out with questions, preparing for the test. So, you know, advertise it, use it. Forums on MSDN is always a good idea, too. Here we go for the Virtual Academy. They don't have any classes on BI there, but they have other other SQL Server courses going on there that may prepare you for the preview the previous tests, the basic tests. TechNet and MSDN has a resource. Last one, hands-on labs, virtual machines provided by Microsoft. You go online for free. They put a virtual machine up for you, on a particular platform, so don't have to mess up with your environment, right? It's kind of slow, but it's there, free. Why not? Last ones, Channel 9. Have you browsed Channel 9? Everybody, right? It's very famous. So it's a great place to go to see people from the product group talking about the, you know, the technology. Microsoft Learning for Official Classes, TechNet, and MSDN. All right? Don't forget to complete the evaluation. All your words, you know, to how I can do it better next time will be very well welcome. All right? Thank you very much for coming, for attending, and enjoy the rest, enjoy the party, right? 7 o'clock, we have a party there. Thank you for coming, folks.